This is a project being run out of Curtin University, and we're becoming a partner over on this side of the country. We're rolling out the Queensland branch, essentially. So this is a mission across the whole of Australia and beyond to essentially use Australia and everywhere else as giant fishing nets to kind of fish through space, catching space rocks. That's essentially the plan. Now, debris from the formation of the planets left behind for 4,500 million years litters our solar system. We've got the asteroid belt, we've got the trans-Neptunian objects, we've got the Oort cloud, these big reservoirs where a lot of leftover material is stored in kind of cold storage. And some of that material over time works its way onto orbits that intersect that of the Earth and can be therefore delivered to the Earth in the form of things burning up in the atmosphere or, more interesting to these guys, making it all the way to the ground as a meteorite.
And what do they want to find out from these meteorites?
Well, it's a really useful way of getting extraterrestrial geology, essentially. I know geology means the study of the Earth's surface, so I don't know if it's asteroidology or whatever. But essentially, every meteorite we find tells us something about the formation of the planets, and it tells us about the body that it came from, where whatever its parent object was that was smashed apart in a collision or what it was chipped off during a collision. Now, meteorites that we find that have just been sat on the ground for an arbitrary length of time, we just find them, we don't know when they landed, are not as much use to us because whilst ever they're on Earth, they're getting weathered, they're getting chemically altered. And the longer on Earth, the more they get affected by the Earth's environment. So the most valuable and the most precious meteorites to researchers are those where we see them fall and we can go get them really quickly so that we know they've not had time to be contaminated by this warm, wet, chemically active environment that we live in.
And how much success have they had in finding meteorites so far and learning things from them?
We're going well so far. So through the history of humanity, there are probably tens of thousands of meteorites that have been found. And these finds are when you just stumble across a meteorite, pick it up, and you don't know how long it's been there. Now, they're useful, don't get me wrong, but they're not as valuable as falls. Falls are where you see something in the night sky or the daytime sky, figure out where it's landed and go get it quickly. And there's a fair number of those. The most valuable of all are those where you not only see the meteorite fall, but you get enough information about its fall to be able to triangulate the path it was following and therefore work out very accurately where it would have fallen on Earth, but also work out the path it was following through the solar system before it came to the Earth. They're the most valuable, and that's what the Fireball Network's trying to do. They've distributed fireball cameras all through Western Australia and South Australia, and we've just installed the first two here in southeast Queensland. And for meteorites like that, ones where we've got full orbital information before the atmosphere, only 26 are known, I think, within the whole of human history.
What they're doing is basically something that hasn't really been done before?
The original attempts at this over the last few decades were very expensive, and because they were very expensive, meant that very few cameras could be distributed. So we were only covering a tiny area of the Earth's surface. The great innovation with these fireball cameras is instead of them costing $100,000 plus per camera, per setup for doing this work, the new design the fireball cameras team have come up with digital cameras instead, with no moving parts, all the rest of it, lowers the cost per camera to just $5,000. Now, that's incredible because at that point you can start doing science on a mass scale. And that's what they're doing. That's why they're able to have already nearly 50 cameras out across Australia with the goal of putting hundreds out there to covering the entire continent through the middle eventually in this.
This is obviously run by this particular team, but something else happening with the sort of citizen science aspect to it is the Juno spacecraft. So what's going on with the Juno spacecraft right now?
So the Juno spacecraft's a really exciting endeavor. So through the history of spaceflight, we've actually visited the outer planets, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune, very rarely. Uranus and Neptune have only had one spacecraft each go past them, and that was Voyager 2, which went past Uranus and then Neptune and then off into the depths of space. Jupiter and Saturn are easier to get to, so they've been visited a bit more, but they've not had a huge amount of attention. So Jupiter is the focus of the Juno mission. And prior to the Juno mission, Jupiter had only had three spacecraft fly by it very close with the express purpose of taking images close up. That was Pioneer 10, Voyager 1, and Voyager 2. It also had the New Horizons spacecraft tear past at a great distance. And then it also had the incredibly successful Galileo mission in the late 1990s, which was our first and only attempt prior to Juno getting into orbit around Jupiter and hanging around there for months and years to get data. And Juno, in some ways, is Galileo's natural successor. It's another spacecraft we've put in orbit around the solar system's largest planet.
The people being involved there, getting to choose photographs and helping analyze the results. Is this different to like pretty much any other space mission in terms of the community involvement?
It's a step further along than what normally NASA does. So one of the best things about NASA for me is that all of their missions, the results are made publicly available immediately. Essentially, as soon as they're received on the ground, they put the raw, untouched images up on the internet for people to look at. What Juno's doing is going one step beyond that. So Juno has about 8 instruments on it, roughly. I can't remember the exact number. One of those in particular is the exciting bit for citizen science, because there's JunoCam. JunoCam is a camera, as the name suggests, on this spacecraft that's whizzing around Jupiter. Now, JunoCam won't survive the full 18 months. It's going to be eventually killed off by the horrible, nasty radiation environment around Jupiter. That's something we can't avoid, unfortunately. But what it's going to do while it's alive, while it's active, is to take images of Jupiter that are fully community-oriented all the way through. So the JunoCam website, you can go onto, and if you're an amateur astronomer who images Jupiter with your backyard telescope, you can upload your images to help people decide whereabouts on Jupiter to take the next images. You can then participate, whether you take photos of Jupiter or not, in the selection process. They'll run polls, they'll have forum discussions. What should we take photographs of next?
And historically, I mean, space and all of this has been something that's kind of been on the fringes of public imagination and knowledge, but it's never really, you know, usually kind of doesn't break through. It's sort of viewed as the field of experts and things like that. Do you think that these kind of missions are really like the future of science in a way, or at least astronomy?
I think public engagement is really important, and we're becoming more and more aware that there are difficulties getting people involved in STEM subjects at school, for example, science, technology, engineering, and maths. And anything that we can do to engage and excite and enthuse the public has to be a good thing. Now, whether you know this is peripheral to people or whether it actually becomes deeply embedded culturally is a bit of an open question, because through the history of space exploration, there are a number of events that really capture the public's attention and put astronomy and space exploration on the front pages as well as in the middle of the newspapers, on the front page of websites. Best example being the moon landings, of course, where millions of people around the planet sat and watched on grainy black and white TV sets as man stepped onto the moon for the first time. So I think this plays into that narrative. It's part of keeping people involved, keeping people aware of how important science is and how cool it is, but also giving people the opportunity to be involved with science on a first-hand basis.